You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Wednesday to you. We are one day away from Razorback football. The Hogs start their season tomorrow night at War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock. We'll touch on that game a little bit. I think we're kind of running out of things to say about UAPB. But Sam Pittman did have his radio show last night. Because of the Thursday game, he had his radio show on Tuesday this week. Typically, it's a Wednesday radio show. Ethan Westerman's with me. Ethan, you listened to it. What were the takeaways from Sam Pittman out of the catfish hole?
Well, the top thing was right off the bat, he named the captains for tomorrow's game. They're this year going to a single game captains approach because Sam has said it's kind of twofold. Number one, he thinks that there's enough deserving players on the team to be captains that he doesn't want to, you know, that can cause some divide maybe if a guy who's really deserving to be captain doesn't get to be. And he thinks that that can, you know, simultaneously build camaraderie. He also pointed to the fact that he thinks that, you know, it's kind of tough whenever you got some returners on the team that are probably, you know, captain caliber to just go off the bat. There's some transfers who are also great leaders and just to immediately make, you know, these transfers the captains. So I think that it's kind of a let's see who emerges as a captain. His goal is to get it by maybe the last few games, some permanent captains, but for sure by the end of the season. He said similar to what they did at Georgia, where they would name captains after the year, which I think just as far as a team camaraderie standpoint, that's probably really healthy. It just brings together this sense of leadership that everybody owns. I think last year maybe, you know, if we're diagnosing what's been said in the preseason, it's that last year maybe the leadership was a concern. But those four captains for tomorrow, Nico Davier, I think I just said
Davier.
Eric Gregory, Amarion Harris, Isaiah Cetania.
Amarion Harris is someone that, I mean, we keep hearing a lot about him, and I don't know, I'm kind of the belief that when you continue to hear about somebody over and over and over, you really need to set your eyes on him on Thursday night and see just what all the fuss is about. Not that UAPB will probably have any linemen that are – they're not going to have linemen that are going to be at the level the teams play Arkansas down the road. We know that. But I'm really interested to see how Harris holds his own because, you know, it's going to be really his first – I don't know if you'd say, you know, major playing experience, but he hadn't had a whole lot.
Yeah, and the more that, you know, Sam talks about him, Taylen Green talked about him, so did Fernando Carmona, it sounds like Amarion had one of the best fall camps. They're saying that the growth that he showed from, like, he was a clear second teamer in the spring. But now Sam's saying, like, if he's lining up who are your top five offensive linemen, because he holds the belief that you get your top five out there and you figure out how, you know, where to put them. They're saying he's definitely not number five. Sam thinks that Amarion is definitely one of his top. Like,
who do you think is number five?
I don't want to just.
That's what I keep thinking about when he said, you know, he may be three, maybe four. He's not five. It's almost like listening to Pittman say that, it was almost like, I don't know if you would call it a weak link or not, but it was like, is there a position on the line that they're concerned about? Because just the way he said it, he said he definitely is not five.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that in his head, they probably has him tiered a little bit.
Probably.
As far as what we can know, we have no clue who maybe
And that's one of the things to watch tomorrow night against UAPB is we've said this a number of times. Last year, they struggled to run the ball against Western Carolina. I don't even think they averaged 3 yards a carry in that game. And when you can't run against Western Carolina, you knew they weren't going to be able to run against the fronts they were going to see down the line. You know, they need to be blowing UAPB off the ball tomorrow night, and that's going to give you, you know, an idea. If they can, okay, then, you know, there's probably some hope that they're going to be able to run the ball down the line. If they cannot, then I think there's going to be a lot of people who are thinking, oh, no, here we go again.
And that's – Sam kind of indicated this during the show, too, that, you know – he's not going to come out and say, like, we should beat them like a drum. I mean, they're 49.5 point favorites.
Yeah, 48.5.
48.5. I mean, who even cares at that point? But, you know, Sam goes in. It sounded like he's way more concerned of how they look with how they play. He said, we have to go play sound. We have to tackle. We have to do the technique of football. And he said that he's mainly looking for are they the hardest playing team on the field? Because, you know, these FCS teams, they'll get up for a game like this and they're going to play hard. But Sam's expecting, you know, the Razorbacks come out and play harder. So, you know, I'll be interested to see less about what the final score is. And like you said, diagnosing what maybe, you know, if something isn't looking good against UAPB, you better believe it probably won't look good against Oklahoma State.
Well, and Pittman's talked too about starting quick in these games. They had a problem last year of starting fast. I don't know what it was like in non-conference games. I think they had a pretty good start against Western Carolina. In fact, I know they scored on the first possession. But in conference games, there were five games where they didn't score a touchdown in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't have games like that and expect to win. And, you know, we know that, you know, the Petrino's reputation is that he has those plays. He calls them their scoring plays. And
yeah.
I've talked to players in the past before who say that it's just uncanny or uncanny that he says, we're going to score on this play. And then lo and behold, many times they go out, they call that play, they get the look they're looking for defensively, and they score. And it builds a belief, I think, in the offense in his ability to play call.
Yeah, well, Taylen Green said just yesterday during a media availability that he already has his first play. Bobby's already told him what the first play is going to be. And also multiple players brought up, or maybe it was just one, were saying, get ready for the Taylen deep ball. They're like, you're going to see Taylen go deep tomorrow. So sounds like they want to score quick. I think in these FCS games, the fast start is really crucial. Think back to, you know, 2022 whenever Missouri State came in and gave Arkansas the biggest scare.
Coached by Petrino.
They got up 17-0 on the Razorbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the you got to set the tone early against these teams. They're already facing an uphill battle. You got to kind of take a little bit of the spirit out of them early.
The Razorbacks and UAPB at 6:30 tomorrow night. We're just kind of running out of things to say about this game. And again, a lot of it has to do with the matchup. It's a 48.5-point spread. If this game, it's one of those deals where it's like, if this is a good game, this is a bad game.
Yeah.
If this is a bad game, this is a bad game. You're kind of in a no-win situation when you play a team like this, I feel like.
Yeah. It's the best result is a blowout with no injuries. I mean, you want to go into Oklahoma State without having any serious addressable concerns as far as what happened on the field. Like last year, how we had can the line run block at all, which lo and behold, they couldn't. But then you also don't want to have last year Rocket Sanders gets hurt early in Western Carolina game and you're missing him for I don't remember how many weeks it was.
It was a bunch.
And then he was off and on hurt the rest of the year. You just want to get out of this clean, I think. I think you want to get out of it clean. You have a two-day advantage on Oklahoma State since you're playing on a Thursday. So you want to be able to rest up and just not feel bad about anything that happened.
I want to tell you that coming up later on the podcast, we're going to have Richard Davenport from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and WholeHogSports.com to talk about this proposal to eliminate the spring transfer portal in college football. Also going to talk a little bit later with Peter Flaherty from Baseball America. Talk to him about his prospect rankings for the Cape Cod League. He was up there this summer, watched some of the Razorbacks perform well there. Also, he's got a ranking out of the top 100 transfers in college baseball, several Razorbacks listed there. Speaking of top 100 transfer rankings, I read this in The Athletic. There's actually two stories in The Athletic that I want to get to today. They did a top 100 transfer ranking in college football, and there were no current Razorbacks on this list. I did find it kind of interesting, though. There were three Razorbacks who transferred away who are on this list. They've got Jaheim Singletary, the former Razorback linebacker.
Jaheim Thomas?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Jaheim Thomas. He's 36th at Wisconsin. You've got KJ Jefferson. They've got him on there. I think he's number 50 now at UCF. And they've got Tank Booker, the defensive lineman, who's now at SMU, ranked number 80. Booker had a tackle for loss the other night when the Mustangs beat Nevada in that comeback in week zero. Is it weird to you? Because I think the feeling here is that Arkansas probably has I don't know if I want to say they have a better roster, because I don't know if they have a better roster than they did last year. But, and again, this preseason optimism only goes so far. I feel like, and maybe you just listen to the coaches talk too much, but I feel like this roster, based on the coaches, fits this team better than last year's roster fit that team. And now we've got the benefit of hindsight. You know,
yeah.
we thought that we thought going into last year that KJ Jefferson might improve as a pocket passer under Dan Enos, and that certainly didn't happen. And so, you know, this is certainly not an apples to apples comparison, but it's interesting just to see that they've got such high opinion of these players who have left Arkansas, and yet the feeling here is that Arkansas may have a better team this year.
Yeah, and what's crazy is Sam Pittman has said on multiple occasions that he thinks that this is as talented of a team as he's had since he's been at Arkansas, which, you know, you wonder if that means, you know, talent right off the bat, you just think of, you know, who are these top players in these transfer rankings, 5-star recruits, 4-star recruits. You wonder if it's more along the lines of what we're trying to do. These players we think are talented to fit our system. You know, I don't expect – it seems like this team is really together. Like you said, this can be a lot of preseason banter that we just have heard a lot of, but they seem really together, and I think it's more about the fit, you know, necessarily than sometimes the talent.
Well, you know, like Jaheim Thomas played well last year, but he goes to Wisconsin, and he's going to play for Luke Fickell, who's a really good linebacker coach, in my opinion. Yeah. And I expect that he will probably fit into their system.
Yeah, well, he played for Fickell at Cincinnati.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's exactly right. KJ Jefferson, he was a good quarterback at Arkansas for a couple of seasons, an effective quarterback. Was not good last year. He goes into Gus Malzahn's system. I think he'll probably be pretty good in that system. How good, I don't know, but I don't think he'll be playing the defenses that he faced last year in the SEC either in the Big 12. I think he could have a big year down in Orlando.
Yeah, I'd agree. I actually saw some odds the other day. I forget what sports book it was, but KJ Jefferson was listed with the 24th best odds at the Heisman, which I don't know if I'd go that far.
I don't think I'd go that
far. I don't go that far, but I mean, I think people are feeling good about him right now again. You know, system is a huge thing, and I think that's what Arkansas is really booking on a lot this year.
And with Taylen Green and Petrino, it's like I thought this was – I think it was Basil who made this point on our show a couple of weeks ago. He talked about, you know, it's all about fit. It's all about fit, especially with quarterbacks and coordinators. And the fit turned out not to be good last year between KJ and Dan Enos. And I think part of that is that I think what we thought we were going to see from Dan Enos did not pan out to what we saw. And by that, I mean, I don't think Arkansas's offense looked quite like the Maryland offense did the year before, which I think is you know, if you look at Maryland's offense in 2022, it had a lot of the same characteristics of a Kendall Briles offense. What Enos actually brought to Fayetteville, I think, was quite different. Green, I think he probably fits Petrino's offense.
Yeah, and, you know, you think about Dan Enos, and it just wasn't the right fit. Like, KJ Jefferson did not have the offensive line to be a there was not a pocket to be a pocket passer. And he was Arkansas's best plays on offense last year were, I feel like, busted plays. The KJ Jefferson just...
When he just got to
just be, got
to be Superman, right?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people will look back on his career at Arkansas and think of those Briles years where he was in a system that really fit him. I think that it'll be a lot prettier of a picture of his Arkansas career the more that years go on.
Most people, I mean, I think people just have a tendency to remember positives more than... I think there's something in our mind that kind of tucks away the negatives and remembers the positive stuff, and I agree with you. I think that as time goes by, KJ is going to be remembered a lot more for what he did on a team that won 9 games than what he did on a team that won 4. Okay, so the other athletic story that came out is this tiering of head coaches, and I thought this was pretty interesting. I just want to kind of get into this, a few things that stood out to me. Number one, in Tier 1, which is the best of the best, they've got Kirby Smart and Dabo. I wish I had Christine in here to talk to her because, of course, she covered Dabo last season. But does that surprise you that they would have – because to me, it feels like Kirby Smart is on a level of his own right now. I think if Nick Saban was still in college football, you would certainly have him there. I think you'd probably have Jim Harbaugh at Kirby Smart's level. I don't know – Clemson's such an interesting dynamic to me because – they're still really good. I mean, they're still putting out teams that win 10 games and play in ACC championship games. They just haven't been at that 13-14 win level in a few years. And I think, to me, this is a big year for Dabo. We had Phil Still on a couple of weeks ago. He said he likes Clemson. He likes the fact that they're an older team that's been together for a long time. And so this is going to be kind of an interesting year to me for Dabo. Can he kind of reassert Clemson into that very upper tier of college football?
Yeah, it's you just wonder when you see lists like this, like what were the criteria for hitting it? Because a lot of these coaches, it looks like recency bias as far as, mm-hmm. I mean, I know we'll get to Sam Pittman in a little bit, but it seemed like recency bias. And if we're going on recency, I don't know how Swinney is really deserving to be in a league of his own with Kirby Smart, you know.
It's hard for anybody to be on Kirby Smart's level. Kirby Smart, you could make an argument that Georgia should be a three-time reigning national champion right now. They were one of the best four teams in the country last year. I think it's just, you know, you can't take Georgia and put them in over Alabama when Alabama just beat them on the field. Yeah. But I think if those teams played, you know, I don't know, 10 times, Georgia wins the majority of those games. It's just they had a bad day and Alabama had the right day. And, you know, maybe Alabama and Georgia were two of the best four teams. And, you know, maybe and again, it gets hard because Texas beat Alabama. I mean, Florida State's in there. Last year, you really needed a 12-team playoff, I think, to determine who the best teams were. But I don't know. It was kind of interesting to me. And these, by the way, this was put together by Chris Vanini and Bruce Feldman at The Athletic, who are their top two college football writers. Okay, in Tier 2, Ethan, they've got Ryan Day at Ohio State. I think we'd all agree with that. Kalen DeBoer, can't argue that, although we'll see what he does at Alabama. Luke Fickell at Wisconsin was a little bit interesting to me. Brian Kelly, you know, I think he deserves to be in that spot. Lance Leopold, Mike Norvell, Lincoln Riley, and Kyle Whittingham. Riley is kind of an interesting one to me. He wins, doesn't really promote defense. To the Arkansas point, though, they've got Sam Pittman in Tier 6 with many, many, many other coaches, and I'll tell you who he's in there with in just a moment. But it was interesting to me that Sam Pittman was in Tier 6 and Brett Bielema was in Tier 5 or in Tier 4 at Illinois, as if Bielema's a big step up from Pittman. You look at their first 4 years, and I know that Brett, he's got the Wisconsin years that he can, you know, hang his hat on, and certainly he did a great job there at Wisconsin. He's coached at Illinois now for a few years too. But if you just take their Arkansas years and compare them, I think at this point in Brett's career, he had two more wins than Pittman had, but he also had a season where he got to play non-conference games, whereas Pittman had that year where he had to play only SEC games. So if you were to give Pittman a 2020 season, you probably would have him right there on par with Brett Bielema. So it begs the question, is Pittman a Tier 4 coach with Bielema, or is Bielema a Tier 6 coach with Pittman, or do maybe they meet there in the middle of Tier 5?
And the thing is, there's just so much whenever you look at their records, and there's so much nuance there, because everybody knows that coming off that 2019 season, a 3-win Arkansas season in 2020, those
should
three
have
wins,
been four, by
yeah,
the way.
Those
they got
hosed at Auburn.
Yeah,
but
I don't know if that was the word I was going to use, but go ahead.
But they those three wins shouldn't be weighted the same as other three wins. And I just think it's interesting. My biggest thing was looking at that Billy Napier's in the tier above Sam Pittman. Billy Napier's 11-14 at Florida with 6-7 and 5-7.
He does
seasons.
Have the years though at Lafayette that preceded Florida, where he did have a really good run.
I
think that might go into the consideration.
Yeah,
there.
It's just I'd like to see the criteria.
A few other coaches that are in Tier 6 with Pittman that I just thought were interesting. Dave Aranda at Baylor, who they won a conference championship not too long ago. Shane Beamer at South Carolina is listed here in Tier 6. Brent Key, who just had the big weekend with Georgia Tech over Florida State last week, he's in Tier 6. And then Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, is in Tier 6 with Sam Pittman.
Yeah.
Take that.
There's
for,
eight
what
tiers,
it's
worth. By the way. There's eight tiers. So Sam was two away from
the
bottom.
They go way down here. Butch Jones at Arkansas State, also in Tier 6 with Pittman. And again, you know, he hasn't had a great tenure at Jonesboro, but he did have. Did he have any success at Tennessee? He had some success before Tennessee. That's what he got into the Tennessee job. I don't think he had much. I'll tell you the thing I remember about him at Tennessee was him. They beat Georgia on the Hail Mary. And him kind of jumping up and down and then just falling down and crying as the state troopers check on him to see if he's all right.
Yeah.
So anyway, you can go to The Athletic and check in on that. Real quick, want to say Dwight McLaughlin made the Minnesota Vikings 53-man roster. Kind of an interesting personnel note there yesterday from the NFL. He had been drafted by the UFL, by the way. And so there is a UFL team that holds rights to him if he does not stay in Minnesota. And then Dan Skipper made the Detroit Lions roster. He had never made a 53-man roster to start the season in his 8-year NFL career. He tweeted after this, eighth time's a charm. Dan Skipper has certainly caught on there with the Lions and Dan Campbell's team. Ethan, we appreciate you being here. When we come back, Richard Davenport's going to join us, and we're going to talk to him about this new spring transfer portal proposal in college football. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you that you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. You can get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. That includes complete access to our website at wholehogsports.com. There you can get breaking news, commentaries, analysis, features, recruiting with Richard Davenport. You can join the Hogs Illustrated with a monthly subscription for $17, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509. Speaking of Richard Davenport, he's on the phone with us now. Richard is the recruiting reporter for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Whole Hog Sports. Richard, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Sorry.
No, you're fine. Hey, so, you know, one of the reason I wanted to have you on today, Richard, was because yesterday the NCAA Football Oversight Committee passed on a recommendation to eliminate the spring transfer portal. Right now, there are two different portal windows for college football. You've got a 30-day window after the season ends in December, and then you've got a 15-day window after spring practice ends for most teams have kind of they've based their spring practice around the spring transfer portal, and you got 15 days in the spring. This would take that 15-day window away, and it would only give teams 30 days, you know, in the months of December and January to bring in portal additions. I just wonder what you think about this. What do you think coaches think about this? Because it feels like coaches have been asking for a lifeline for a little bit, saying we're overwhelmed with the amount of transfer work that we have to do. We need some relief, and it seems like it might be coming in this.
No, you said it. There's no doubt the coaches have spoken, and they would like to have something like this implemented. Obviously, during December and January, I mean, they're moving up this early signing period, so that helps. But you know, when you're recruiting and, you know, getting ready for a bowl game or what have you in December, you're also recruiting for the portal, and that's, you know, that's pretty crazy in itself. Where a few years ago they didn't have to worry about that, and then again, you know. You have that 15-day window in the spring that came along, and then they had to do it all over again. And it's just one of those type deals that coaches really are begging for a little bit of downtime. And during that 15-day window in the spring, they're also doing spring evaluation period where the assistant coaches are out on the road visiting schools, evaluating players and stuff like that. And sometimes they may have to be called off the road because a transfer can visit at the last second, and then he has to, you know, call all the schools that he was going to visit on, say, Friday, and say, hey, I'll be there another time. I got a kid coming in this weekend for an official visit. So there's a lot of things going on with that. And the only thing that I, you know, with all the lawsuits that are being filed against the NCAA, and whenever the NCAA makes a rule change. I just wonder if this may be another one where, you know, some people file a lawsuit against the NCAA and try to force them to keep that 15-day window. I don't know. I'm not an attorney. I don't know all the ins and outs of that. But you've seen so many lawsuits whenever the NCAA's tried to do certain things, and this may be one of those cases too. But it is definitely a two things, like you said. One, the coaches are just screaming, saying, hey, we need a little bit of downtime, because mm-hmm. not only in the spring are they busy with spring evaluation period, they're also getting ready for June camps and official visits for high school kids. So then you throw in the transfers. It just adds to that. But they would like to be able to have one time when they know, okay, this is when we're probably going to lose some guys off of our roster, and then versus two times, you know, in the spring and in December and January. So I think that's part of it. Another thing, in the spring, you may have some guys that are, definitely attracted to other schools because of NIL, and let's face it, there's bidding going on behind the scenes, and schools are kind of tired of that too. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things going on with this proposal.
The Football Oversight Committee that has proposed this includes Hunter Yurecek, who's Arkansas's athletics director. It seems like conference commissioners are in favor of this. Greg Sankey kind of openly advocated for this back in February, and typically, when you see a proposal like this passed on to the Division I Council, the council's going to vote on whether or not to implement this proposal in October. But when you see these proposals passed on, it's very unlikely that the Division I Council is going to reject the recommendation of the football committee that's passed this on. Richard, I wonder how much does this put, in the House proposal, you could have 105 football players on scholarship, and so there may be even more people to fill those roster spots in the fall. I just wonder how much more of a pressure, may not be the word, but there's going to be a little bit more. We'll just use the word pressure to get it right in the portal in December, because you don't have that April window to fall back on.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. A lot of times during these guys enroll in January from the December-January portal opening, you're able to evaluate those guys during the off season and during the spring. You go, we might have missed on this guy, or mm-hmm. we might have missed on that guy. So, yeah, it's going to put a premium on not missing on evaluation of transfer guys. And that's one of the things that I think that Arkansas did very, very well, based on what Sam says and what I hear, that they're very, very pleased with the transfers that they got, not only in December and January, but also this spring. And there's you wouldn't have Steven Dix, the linebacker from Marshall. He wouldn't be on campus if mm-hmm. this was already in place. Wouldn't have Larry Worth, linebacker also, slash safety. Wouldn't have him on campus too. And you wouldn't have Anthony Switzer. So the good thing is about the spring part is it does kind of help you cover up some of maybe your mistakes with the first haul that you had from the transfer portal.
And of course, it's going to make it, you talk about the onus is going to be on the coaches to make the right decision in the fall. It's also going to be on the players to make the right decision. There's no more of this. You go somewhere, you stay there for a few months, and then you hop back in the portal after spring practice is over. Richard, we appreciate you being with us. Richard Davenport of WholeHogSports.com and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Peter Flaherty of Baseball America. We're going to talk about a couple of stories he's written recently, talking about top 100 transfers in college baseball, also his evaluations of the Razorbacks, who had the best summers up at the Cape Cod League. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. We want to tell you about Bentonville Glass, our friends who are serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and find them at 507 South Main Street in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Peter Flaherty covers college baseball for Baseball America, and he joins us now. Peter, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk Razorback baseball.
So you've written a couple of things here recently that caught my eye in terms of Arkansas. Number one, you've talked about the top 100 transfers in the sport over this offseason. Also, I know you've got quite the past with the Cape Cod League, living up in that area. You went by, and I know you saw a lot of games this fall or in the summer. Let's start with the transfers, because there are a lot of notable transfers here this year. There always are. But it feels like from a pitcher perspective, this is really the best year Arkansas's had in the transfer portal. They don't go out and try to get pitchers a whole lot. Number one, they are very big on, homegrown pitching talent, whether it be a Hagen Smith or a Gabe Gackle, or you could go on down the list, but they do go out this fall and they get Landon Beidelschies from Ohio State. They get Zach Root from East Carolina, a couple of big left-handers who could potentially, work their way into the Arkansas rotation. They're both high up on your list. What have you seen from them, and what can Razorback fans expect to see from them when they get their eyes on them this fall?
Yeah, those are two really, really high impact guys. I think when you lose the likes of Brady Tiger, Mason Molina, and Hagen Smith, that's a lot to replace. And arguably, especially a guy like Hagen Smith, that's irreplaceable. And you need high impact guys right away. And that's where kind of the transfer portal gives, I guess, instead of taking away. But Beadlesheese and Root are two guys that, will headline the Arkansas rotation, give them a ton of depth, and perhaps overall, make it just as strong, if not stronger, than last year. But Beadlesheese is the better stuff of the two. They're both advanced strike throwers. It's an enticing blend of strikes and stuff. Root has, fastballs, he'll pitch in the low 90s with it. He's been up to 95, advanced feel for both the slider and changeup, and they're both at least above average. Changeup's absolutely plus. Slider's probably a 55 on the 2080 scale. Beadlesheese is a his fastball, again, has been up into the mid-90s, up to 97 last year at Ohio State with some carry at the top of the zone, gets over the barrel of opposing hitters and mixes in a really effective breaking ball as well. So however they slice it up, it'll be a real battle for the Friday starter spot. But to have those two guys on Friday and Saturday, or if you want to, throw in a righty in there on a Saturday and have one go on a Sunday, those are two high-impact guys and will be really high draft picks next July.
With Beadlesheese at Ohio State, it's a northern school. They've got a coaching change this offseason. Maybe not that big of a surprise to see him in the portal. I was really surprised to see Root there, though, because East Carolina is a program that's had a lot of success, and they've had a lot of success with pitchers.
Yeah, I think he was a surprising name to hop in there. As you said, Beadlesheese, I wasn't all that shocked with the pitching change, with the coaching change, and Mark Allen going to Southern California. But there was a little bit of a mass exodus from ECU. Root hopped in and committed to Arkansas, but a guy like Bristol Carter as well, freshman outfielder, had a really good and productive first season for him, also hopped in. So tough time. I think the transfer portal taketh away. The second part of the phrase I referenced when talking about Root and Beetlesheese, that happened with ECU. So he was a little more surprising to hop in, but a really, really high quality get by Coach Van Horn and his staff.
You've got 8 Razorbacks in your top 100. We won't talk about all of them, but a couple others that I did want to mention and get your thoughts on. Cam Kozel, a second baseman coming over from Vanderbilt. You've got him pretty high up in your rankings. Charles Davlin, an outfielder coming in from Florida Gulf Coast. And then just outside your top 50 is Logan Maxwell, an outfielder from TCU. Those three.
Yeah, and I guess a spoiler alert to a piece I have coming out next week on the top transfer classes. Arkansas will be, you know, right near or at the top. I mean, they crushed it. And those three guys, I think, along with Root and Beetlesheese, headline the class. And Kozel, I got a lot of good looks at him this summer as well. He's a strong physical second baseman, handles himself really well at the position. But I thought the bat to me stood out and is what's going to be his carrying tool. There's an advanced feel to hit. He's got an advanced feel for the barrel, a little bit of thump in there as well. But I saw him drive the baseball into either gap, and it's a really hitterish look in the box. And I think, you know, after a solid freshman year at Vanderbilt, he's going to be able to build off of that and hit in the top half of the order for Arkansas. But Davlin for me is the X factor of the class. And I think is maybe not as big of a household name as, you know, Zach Root, Atlanta Beetlesheese, Cameron Kozel coming from Vanderbilt. But he is, you know, there's top 5 round draft pick upside here with Davlin. There's a ton of tools packed into his 5'9 frame. From what I saw this summer from him, he is the look of a guy who will start every day in center field for the Razorbacks, sit near the top of the order. He can really go and get it in center field and in all directions, but especially gap to gap. His speed and athleticism and instincts really shine. He can really run. And then there's some legit juice to the pull side at the plate. You look at him and you don't, you know, you might underrate it a little bit, but he can really, really swing it. And then with Maxwell, it's another experienced guy. It's for sure hit over power. But his bat, I think, you know, you stick him in the bottom half, bottom third of the lineup. It's a guy who's going to consistently move the baseball, string together quality at bats, a low heartbeat guy that, you know, you feel really confident when he's in the box in a big spot. So those are, you know, we've already talked about 5 high impact guys, and there are more in that class. So there are, you know, they, as I said, Coach, they crushed it. That, you know, that's, this is how you operate in the transfer portal.
I think among your top 100, only LSU had more players than Arkansas. LSU had 9, Arkansas had 8. You know, LSU and Arkansas and Tennessee, they're always right there. You know, I mean, over the last few years, in terms of players that are getting drafted. Out of this group of, whether it be players who are transferring in or the sophomores who are rising to the junior class this year, Arkansas is going to have a big draft class next year. They're expecting maybe the most draft picks they've ever had out of the Razorback program. I wonder, though, as it relates to the transfer portal, this reputation that Arkansas has built for itself as a program that really develops players well developmentally, how much does that play a factor into recruiting some of these players, you think, the high-end players?
I mean, it's an enormous factor, I think, in these guys going to Arkansas. And I think in today's day and age with NIL, it's really easy to say that, and I think it's a really lazy argument to say that, you know, schools will kind of buy players. And I don't think that's true across the country, whether you're talking about Tennessee, LSU, Arkansas. You know, these guys are choosing these schools based on their ability to develop, their track record of winning, and especially with Arkansas. And it's a trickle-down effect from the entire staff, whether it be Coach Van Horn, Coach Thompson. There is a lengthy track record of getting guys to campus, developing them, maximizing their skill set, and helping them achieve their ceiling. And, I mean, you look at the draft year in and year out, 2025 will be a monster year, as you've already referenced. But each summer, the draft is littered with Razorbacks. So I think when you can sell guys on that, their ability to become high-level pro players, high-level, you know, high-impact players at the big league level, that's really, really enticing for a 19, 20, 21, even 22-year-old kid. So the ability to sell a development aspect is huge, and I think it's the main reason why guys are committing to Arkansas.
Got Peter Flaherty from Baseball America with us. So you saw these players in Cape Cod. The Cape Cod League, Vahivo Aloy had a big summer until he took off about the first week of July. Whenever he left, he was way ahead of everybody in home runs and RBI. And then he leaves, and here comes Ryder Helfrich. Ryder Helfrich ends up tied for the league lead in home runs with Ethan Petrie from South Carolina. Helfrich led the league in RBI this year. Both of them worked on some new batting stances. We talked to Dave Van Horn about that a couple of weeks ago, especially Aloy. You can see it in the clips of him that it's a totally different look than he had. You've got both of these in your top 25 Cape prospects. What did you see from them, and why do you think they had such a big summer?
Yeah, both had monster summers, and starting with Aloy, it was nice to see him put together the summer he had, where trying to find the right adjective to describe his 2020, it was a little bit up and down. I'd say there were flashes what he showed at Sac State, but you know, coming from Sacramento State, there was going to be an adjustment period in the SEC, which is by far the best conference, or the best conference in college baseball. I don't want to say by far, but I thought he showed really well in the Cape, and if he had stayed for the whole summer, he probably would have won top pro prospect, would have been my guess, or been right there.
Mm-hmm.
Up near at the top, but there was legit power to all fields. The hit tool, I thought, made really positive strides. There were some swing and miss this spring, and even dating back to his freshman year, especially against secondary offerings, and I think he cleaned that up well. It's still there, but I was most impressed with the strides that the hit tool took. And then with Ryder, 84, I think, at bats it was as a freshman, got his feet wet, and I think that's where the Cape is so beneficial to a lot of these guys, because you have freshmen and sophomores, especially freshmen who kind of like Ryder got their feet wet with less than 100 at bats. And then you go up and you play every day, you get a ton of at bats, you get a ton of reps, and it's against the highest quality competition you can find. And there's monster juice to the pull side with Ryder, easily plus. And I thought that behind the plate, the fundamentals were there. And I think that he is the look of someone who can take the reins and be Arkansas's everyday catcher this spring. So, I mean, with Vejeva, first round draft pick type of guy, that certainly that type of upside if he has a productive spring. And then with Ryder, you know, catchers who can hit and can hit for power are always at a premium. So, I mean, if he can put together a strong sophomore year, he'll either head back to the Cape, go to Team USA, or both. And then as a junior, again, that's day one draft pick type of guy. So I foresee them being two high-impact players for Arkansas this spring.
Ben Church, who does some analytics for one of the programs there on Cape Cod, he had a stat this summer of catchers who led the league in balls that were outside the strike zones that were called strikes, and Helfrich was right there at the top, which I think kind of speaks to what you were talking about, his catching ability behind the plate. I want to ask you about a few other players that you saw in Cape Cod. One player from your neck of the woods, Michael Anderson's kind of an interesting transfer in here from Rhode Island. Would assume that he might be in play for, you know, playing time at first base at Arkansas. What have you seen from him? Because it seems like the power is there with him. It just may be inconsistent power.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a really interesting get for them in the portal. And I don't want to necessarily say that they took a flyer, but I think that he's a really nice depth piece. Mm-hmm. You know, whether they use him kind of as a matchup DH type when you get a lefty on the mound, or however they want to use him, it's without a doubt power over hit, but the power there is legit. I mean, he wasn't a metal bat merchant at all. Fans might look at the stats a little bit and look at what he did at Rhode Island and, you know, not be super juiced up, but he was the best player on the Cape for the first 2 weeks of the season. Like, I mean, he was going gangbusters, and then he slowed down a little bit, and there's a lot of swing and miss and some pitch recognition issues. And I know I'm kind of backtracking what I said, but the power is very real. So I mean, if they can clean up even just a little bit the swing and miss, he's, as at least for me, he's a very interesting depth piece that they bring in. And again, I think against left-handed pitching, he's a great guy to have in your back pocket. And you know, late in a game, if you need a you're kind of going for it all, he's someone who can change the complexion of a game in one swing. So that was an interesting pickup, especially from this neck of the woods. I think mm-hmm. that's a little rarer for Arkansas, so I'm curious to see how he does.
And then Gage Wood, at one point in time, I think even late into his time on the Cape this summer, I think he was leading the league in ERA, was right up there at the top of the WHIP leaders. It seemed like he really built on a strong end to his sophomore season at Arkansas. Tate McGuire is also a right-hander who we didn't see pitch very much at Arkansas this year, but I know they've got a lot of optimism about what he can do, and it seemed like he put up some great outings.
Yeah, I mean, both Gage and Tate had really, really good summers, and I think McGuire and Tate especially, just because, seven starts, logged 26 innings, 33 Ks, and a little bit similar to Anderson, through the first, I'd say, month plus, he had the look of someone who could potentially take home pitcher of the year honors, came back down to earth a little bit, but he's a guy that, I think he'll probably compete for the third weekend starter spot along with Gage Wood, depending on how they want to use him. Ben Bibee could be a guy in the mix there, depending on how they want to use him. Gabe Gackel, again, I doubt that they're going to move Gabe Gackel off of his role from this spring, but those are some of the names that'll probably, be in contention for that third starter spot. But with McGuire and Bibee, it's a really enticing and intriguing blend, a little bit in the mold of Beetlejuice and Root, but less loud than those two, of strikes and stuff. And I saw it all summer, especially with McGuire making seven starts, saw two of them. He pounds the zone, makes really quality pitches, stays off the barrel. And it's going to be a little different with metal, but those traits and qualities play anywhere. So it's going to be a really fascinating fall in terms of seeing how they go about filling this third starter slot and, who's going to take over. And I think that they have the luxury of having a lot of really good problems, whether it be, three, four arms or so, maybe even five, competing for the last weekend starter spot, or guys scratching and clawing to get in the starting nine every day. They have a lot of quote unquote problems that I think every program in America wishes they had.
And it's very unlikely for a team to have three consistent starters throughout the season like Arkansas had last year, at least up until the end of the season. Probably going to be a lot of different guys that they tinker with in those starting roles even after the season ends. Two more for you real quick, Peter. You've written about Hunter Dietz in the past. He was maybe the jewel of their signing class last year in terms of players who got to campus, didn't get going, had some injuries. You've seen him. Like I said, you've written on him. What's the ceiling for this guy when he's healthy?
Yeah, the ceiling's immensely high. You mentioned that it referenced the freshman spotlight piece I wrote on him last fall, and he had all the buzz in the world and was regarded as one of the, more highly touted freshmen to make it to campus. And I think that the ceiling with him is still really high. I think the key for him is just staying healthy and staying on the mound. So I think that in terms of upside, it's immense. It's high-end draft pick type deal, a guy who can log a ton of innings for you on the mound, and I think in the mold of a high impact guy. I'm not really sure how he's going to fit this year, but I'm sure, assuming health, they're going to try and get him out on the mound as much as they can.
Yeah, I think they expect that they're expecting that he'll be ready to go when the fall rolls around here in about a week or so. Who are the teams to watch in 2025? We'll get you out of here on this. And where does Arkansas fit in with? I'm sure LSU is up there. Texas A&M is up there. Who are some of the others that we should be watching next season?
Yeah, I think when you're talking about the early national title contenders, you and it's going to be really SEC heavy again, but at least for me, A&M would be my personal number one team. And in that tier, I think you got LSU, you've got Arkansas, Florida will be right back in the mix, Tennessee, and then a couple of ACC teams to watch as per usual. I'll give you, at least for me, I think Virginia, who's always there, and Florida State's going to be really, really strong again with that 1-2 punch in the rotation with Jamie Arnold and Cam Leiter. And if you're looking for a deepish sleeper, I'll say Oklahoma State. I really like what they're doing, and they lost a lot of firepower, but there's a track record of success in Stillwater that fans can be excited about. But in terms of the two way too early kind of upper echelon of teams, Arkansas is, they're A1. They're right there with the national title contenders and are a national title contender.
Dave Van Horn said a couple of weeks ago that Arkansas and Oklahoma State are talking about playing a fall exhibition series here at Baum Walker Stadium. So a couple of national championship contenders there, according to Peter Flaherty from Baseball America. Baseball America, one of my favorite subscriptions that I've got. You can read more of Peter's work at baseballamerica.com. Peter, we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Peter. And we thank you for joining us today on the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow to preview the football game between the Razorbacks and UAPB tomorrow night at War Memorial Stadium. Until then, hope you'll visit our website at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.